buffalo seem romantic. I set the journal down on the ground, then slowly made my way around the platform, scanning every inch of it. I really wanted to find some sign of my mom, a stone scratched with H plus H, or maybe some lost journal pages she'd tucked under a rock or something. But all I found were two spiders that looked at me with about as much interest as a pair of British royal guards. I gave up on my little scavenger hunt and walked back to the center of the platform, wrapping my arms around myself. I needed a question answered, and I got the feeling this was the best place to ask. "Mom, why did you send me to Italy?" My voice threw off the quiet peacefulness of everything around me, but I shut my eyes tight to listen. "Nothing." I tried again. "Why did you send me to be with Howard?" Still nothing. Then the wind picked up and made a whipping noise through the grass and trees, and suddenly all the loneliness and emptiness I carried around with me swelled up so big it swallowed me whole. I pressed my palms to my eyes, pain ricocheting through my body. What if my mom and my grandma and the counselor were wrong? What if I hurt this badly for the rest of my life? What if every second of every day would be less about what I had than what I'd lost? I sank to the floor, pain washing over me in big, jagged waves. She told me over and over how wonderful my life was going to be, how proud she was of me, how much she wished she could be there, not just for the big moments, but for the little ones. And then she'd said she'd find a way to stay close to me. But so far, she'd just been gone. Then gone some more. And all that gone stretched out in front of me like a horizon, endless and daunting and empty. I'd been running around Italy trying to solve the mystery of the journal, trying to understand why she'd done what she'd done. But really, I'd just been looking for her, and I wasn't going to find her. Ever. "I can't do this," I said aloud, pressing my face into my hands. "I can't be here without you." And that's when I got slapped. Well, maybe not slapped, it was more like a nudging. But suddenly, I was getting to my feet because a word was pushing itself into my brain. "Look." I shaded my eyes. The sun was rising over the hills, heating up the undersides of the clouds and setting them on fire in crazy shades of pink and gold. Everything around me was bright and beautiful and suddenly very clear. I didn't get to stop missing her. Ever. It was the thing that my life had handed me, and no matter how heavy it was, I was never going to be able to set it down. But that didn't mean I wasn't going to be okay, or even happy. I couldn't imagine it yet exactly, but maybe a day would come when the hole inside me wouldn't ache quite so badly, and I could think about her and remember, and it would be all right. That day felt light years away, but right at this moment, I was standing on a tower in the middle of Tuscany, and the sunrise was so beautiful that it hurt. And that was something. I picked up the journal. It was time to finish. June 19. Every new beginning comes from some other beginning's end. I had that song lyric written on a piece of paper above my desk for almost a year, and only today does it actually mean anything to me. I've spent the entire afternoon wandering the streets and thinking, and a few things have become clear. First, I have to leave Italy. Last September, I met an American woman who's trapped in a terrible marriage because Italian law says that children stay with the father. I doubt Matteo will ever want anything to do with our baby, but I can't take that chance. And second, I can't tell Howard how I feel about him. He thinks I've already chosen someone else, and he needs to keep thinking that. Otherwise, he'll leave behind the life he's created for himself for a chance to start things with me. I want that so badly, but not enough to let him give up his dream of living and working in the middle of so much beauty. It's what he deserves. So there it is. In loving Howard, I have to leave him. And to protect my child, I have to put as much distance between her and her father as possible. Yes, I think it's a girl. If I could go back to one moment, just one, I would be back at the tower, a whole world of possibility ahead of me. And even though my heart hurts more than I ever thought it could, I wouldn't take back that sunrise or this baby for anything. This is a new chapter, my life, and I'm going to run at it with arms outstretched. Anything else would be a waste. The end. The rest of the journal was blank. I slowly turned to the front cover and read that first sentence one more time. I made the wrong choice. Sonia had been wrong. My mom hadn't sent the journal to the cemetery for me. She'd sent it for Howard. She'd wanted him to know what had really happened and tell him that she'd loved him all along. And then, even though she couldn't go back and change their story, she'd done the next best thing. She'd sent me. Chapter 25. I practically flew back to the cemetery. I was incredibly nervous, but I felt light, too. No matter what Howard's reaction was, it was going to be okay, and he deserved to read her story, right this second. Daylight had totally transformed the cemetery, taking it from washed out to vibrant, and I ran diagonally across the grounds, cutting through a batch of headstones and ignoring my blossoming side ache. I had to catch Howard before he started working. He was sitting on the porch with a cup of coffee, and when he saw me, he stood up in alarm.
"You aren't being chased again, are you?"
I shook my head, then came to a stop, struggling to catch my breath.
"Oh, good."
He sat back down.
"Do you always sprint? I thought you were more into long-distance running."
I shook my head again, then took a deep breath. "Howard, I have to ask you something."
"What?"
"Do you know you're not my father?" For a few long seconds, my words hung in the space between us like a bunch of shimmering soap bubbles. Then he smiled.
"Define father."
My legs gave out, and I stumbled toward the porch.
"Whoa, whoa, you okay?"
He put his hand out to steady me. "Just let me sit down." I fell to a seat on the porch step next to him. "And you know what I mean by father. I mean the man who gave me half my DNA." He stretched his legs out long in front of him.
"Well, in that case, no. I'm not your father. But if you go with another definition, meaning a man who wants to be in your life and help raise you, then yes, I am."
I groaned. "Howard, that's sweet and everything, but explain yourself. Because I have spent the last 24 hours completely confused and worried about hurting you, and you've known all along?"
"I'm sorry about that. I didn't know you had any idea."
He looked at me for a moment, then sighed.
"All right. You up for a story?"
"Yes." He settled in like he was about to tell a story he'd told a million times.
"When I was 25, I met a woman who changed everything for me. She was bright and vibrant, and whenever I was with her, I felt like I could do anything."
"You mean my mom, right?"
"Let me finish. So I met this woman, and I fell completely head over heels in love with her. I'd never felt that way about anyone before. It was like I'd been looking for her all along and just hadn't realized it. I knew I had to do everything in my power to make her feel the same way. So I started by being her friend. I took an Italian class I didn't need just so I'd have some extra time with her."
"The beginner's class?"
"Shh. Lena, listen. We took Italian together. I sat in on the rest of her classes, and I even worked my way into her circle of friends. But every time I tried to summon up the courage to tell her how I felt, I turned into a blob of jello."
"A blob of jello?" I said incredulously.
"Yes. You know, the gelatin."
"I know what jello is. Apparently good guy does not equal good storyteller."
"What I mean by that is that I liked her so much, it literally tongue-tied me. And then I found out I was too late. While I was bumbling around carrying her books to class and pretending I liked to go out dancing, some other man had swooped in and carried her off.
Matteo Rossi. He flinched.
How do you know his name?
I'll tell you later. He hesitated.
Anyway, I told myself that if this other guy was someone great, someone who really cared about her and made her happy, I would leave it alone. But I knew Matteo, and I knew what he was really like. Unfortunately, your mother was blinded by him for a long time, and even though we tried our hand at a relationship, she ended up choosing him. That's how you came to be, her relationship with Matteo. But when your mom got sick, I was the one she asked to step in, and so I did, because I loved her.
He nudged me.
And you're kind of growing on me, too.
I groaned again. Okay, nice story, but you got some of it wrong. And why did you and my grandma tell me you're my father if it isn't true?
I can see now that that was wrong, and I'm sorry. I wasn't planning to at first. Your grandmother and I started communicating after Hadley passed, and a few weeks in, I realized that your grandmother assumed I was your father. I knew it wasn't true, but I worried that if I told her the truth, she'd change her mind about sending you, and your mother had made me promise to bring you here. I also thought it might be better for you. I thought that if you believed I was your father, it would make you more likely to come here and give me a chance.
Except I was a total brat.
No. Under the circumstances, you were actually pretty great.
Liar. He smiled.
I guess I just didn't know what else to do. Your grandfather was already struggling, and I didn't know what the situation was with Addie's family. I was worried you wouldn't have anywhere to go. So when your grandmother asked if she could tell you that I'm your father, I said yes.
He shook his head.
I planned to tell you sooner rather than later, but after that night at the pizzeria, I thought I'd let you settle in first. But you don't seem to be much of the settling in type. I should have known you'd see right through it.
You're like twice as tall as me, and you have blonde hair. We look nothing alike.
True.
He paused.
So now it's my turn. How long have you known?
About a day.
How did you find out?
I picked up the journal from the steps and handed it to him. This.
Your journal?
No, it's my mom's. It's the journal she kept when she was living here.
This is her journal? I noticed it looked similar, but I thought it was just a coincidence.
He turned it over in his hands. She wrote about everything that happened between her and Matteo, only for most of it she just called him X. So at first I thought I was reading about you. But then you didn't know about the secret bakery.
Wait a minute. The secret bakery? The place Ren asked me about?
Yeah. He was trying to surprise me by figuring out where it was.
So Ren knows about all this, too?
Yes. He actually helped me track down Matteo. I looked away. We, met him. He levitated like half a foot.
You met him?
I kept my gaze on the ground. Uh-huh.
Where?
Rome. He was looking at me like I just told him I was actually half ostrich.
When did you go to Rome?
Yesterday.
Yesterday?
Yeah, we took the express train. First, Ren picked me up. Then we went to the FAAF, and I called Francesca.
Francesca Bernardi? How did you even know about her?
The journal. She told me what Matteo's last name was, and we found him online and went to his art gallery, and it was, well, a disaster. His mouth was literally hanging open.
Please tell me you're joking.
I shook my head. Sorry, I'm not. He rubbed his hand across his chin.
Okay, so the two of you tracked down Matteo. Then what? Did he know who you were?
He made up this story about my mom being crazy and faking her journal. It was ridiculous. I mean, we look exactly alike, and he just kept telling me that he'd never had a relationship with her. We ended up just booking it out of there. Howard blew the air out of his mouth.
Your mother would kill me. Here I thought you and Ren were just out eating gelato and going dancing, but you were tracking down your father in another city?
Yes, But I won't do that again, I said hastily. It was kind of a one-time deal. Unless you're hiding something else from me.
Nothing. All my cards are out.
Okay, good.
But where did you get the journal? Did you find it after your mom passed away?
No. Sonia gave it to me.
Sonia? My Sonia?
Yeah. My mom sent it in the mail last September, and when it got to the cemetery, Sonia was worried it was going to upset you, so she held off for a couple of days. But then you told her about the plan for me to come stay here, and she thought my mom had sent it for me. But it wasn't for me. It was for you. Howard held the book up carefully, like it was a bird he didn't want to fly away. You should read it.
Mind if I start now?
Please do. He slowly opened the cover, stopping at the sight of that first sentence.
Oh.
Yeah. I'll leave you alone. Chapter 26. 2 hours later, Howard came to my bedroom door, journal in hand.
I finished.
That was quick.
Want to go sit on the porch again?
Sure. I followed him downstairs and we settled ourselves on the porch swing. His eyes were kind of red.
It was hard for me, reading all of that. I mean, she told me bits of it, but I didn't know the whole story. There were so many misunderstandings, missed connections.
He looked out over the cemetery.
She didn't get everything right. For one thing, I never dated Adrienne.
You didn't?
No. Matteo did.
I looked at him blankly.
Your mother wasn't the only student Matteo was messing around with.
Oh. Another puzzle piece fell into place. So is that why you told her the story of the bull and the baker? You were trying to tell her to look closer because Matteo was two-timing her? He grimaced.
Yes, but I obviously wasn't very successful. She had no idea what I meant by that story.
Yeah, that was pretty cryptic. Did you just make that story up?
No, it's real. I think it's pretty unlikely that it's true, but it's one of the legends that has been hanging around the city for centuries. I love stuff like that.
He shook his head.
Anyway, I knew that your mom was involved with Matteo. She kept it a secret because she was worried he'd get in trouble with the school, but he kept it a secret because he was a dirtbag. I knew he'd had at least a few affairs with students, and from what I'd seen of him, I knew he was bad news. I had my suspicions, and then one day I walked in on Adrienne and Matteo in the dark room. That night, when your mom saw us outside the club, I had been confronting her about it. I wanted her to tell your mother.
Why didn't you just tell her? He shook his head.
Everyone but Hadley knew that I was in love with her, and I knew it would just look like I was stirring things up. I was also pretty sure that Matteo would just deny it, and then I would lose your mother's trust. Then, once they broke up, I couldn't see any reason to tell her. Also, I was kind of a coward. The breakup was my fault.
Why?
Your mom was becoming withdrawn and started saying pretty critical things about herself and her work. So one week, when Matteo went out of town for a conference, I called him up and told him that if he didn't stay away from her, I'd tell the school.
And that's when he broke up with her?
Yes. And then I went ahead and told the school anyway, and they ended up firing him. Hadley was so heartbroken, it was like the color had been sucked out of her. I spent weeks wondering if I'd done the right thing.
He pushed off, sending the swing gliding.
But then she seemed to get better. I convinced her to spend a summer here with me, and we were together for a while. But then I lost her again.
Because of me. He shook his head, gesturing to the cemetery.
She should have told me. I would have walked out on this in a heartbeat.
That's exactly why she didn't tell you.
I know.
He sighed.
I just wish she'd let me make that decision. One day with Hadley was easily worth a lifetime in Italy.
Tell me about it. I studied him for a moment. He loved her, like, really loved her, and he'd been missing her for even longer than I had. It made me want to throw my arms around him. I looked away, blinking back tears. Hopefully my eyeballs would dry out one of these days, Otherwise, I was going to be offered a job as spokesperson for Kleenex or something. Did you ever try to get her back?
No. In my mind, she'd chosen Mateo. If I'd known the reason why, it would have been a different story. It wasn't until years later that I found out they weren't together, and then only recently that I found out about you. I worried a lot about her. But every time I thought about reaching out, it was like something stopped me. Maybe my pride.
Or just not wanting to get hurt again. She basically smashed your heart to bits. He chuckled.
Smashed indeed. And of course, I was eventually able to move on. But having you here, well, I've kind of been reliving it.
We were quiet for a minute. The sun had risen full and hot, and my hair was practically sizzling. He shook his head.
This isn't at all how I had imagined we'd have this conversation, but I'm glad that things happened the way they did. And now we don't have to worry about Mateo. Your mom was really careful about keeping you away from him, especially once she was successful. She had always wanted to bring you to Italy, but was too afraid to until now. I guess you being close to 18 made her less afraid of Mateo.
She probably never thought I'd be the one to go looking for him.
Never. I think she underestimated you.
He chuckled.
I think I did, too. I can't believe you went to Rome.
It was stupid.
Well, that goes without saying, but it was also pretty brave.
Ren came with me. He helped a lot. My expression fell. Ren.
What?
Ren's not talking to me anymore. I upset him. Howard's forehead creased.
Did you get in an argument?
Something like that.
I'm sure whatever happened, you two can work it out. He really cares about you. I can tell.
Maybe. We sat there for a moment, swinging back and forth, when suddenly a thought occurred to me. Howard, were you trying to tell me something when you told me that weird story about the woman who gave birth to the boar? He laughed.
The Porcellino? I'd better stop doing that. It really doesn't seem to work.
No.
All right, yes, I was trying to tell you something. When we went to see the statue, I realized it was the perfect symbol. Even though our circumstances are strange and we're a bit of a mismatch, I really do want to be a part of your life. We may not be a regular kind of family, but if you'll have me, I'll be your family just the same.
I looked up at him, and a thousand feelings swelled up inside me until I was as taut and full as a balloon. My mom had been totally right. No one would ever come close to replacing her, but if I had to choose someone, it would be Howard. She'd just been a few steps ahead of me.
So what do you say, Carolina?
I hesitated. I didn't want to rush into anything, but I did know that today it felt right, and that was going to have to be enough. Okay. I nodded. I'm in if you're in. He gave me one of his lopsided smiles, then leaned back in the swing.
Good. Well, now that we have all that cleared up, what about this Ren business?
Chapter 27. Howard insisted I couldn't give up. If I wanted to see things through, I needed to be good and sure that there hadn't been some kind of gross miscommunication between Ren and me. That's really how he said it. Gross miscommunication. I shoved my remaining shreds of dignity into the back of my closet, then called Ren's cell phone. Twice. Both my calls went straight to voicemail, and I did my best to block out the image of him hitting reject. Finally, Howard helped me track down the Ferrara's number, and I called their house.
Ciao, Lena,
Odette trilled. She obviously hadn't been filled in on the state of affairs. Hi, Odette. Is Ren home?
Yes, just a moment.
She set the phone down. Then there were some muffled noises. Finally, she picked it up again.
Lena?
Yeah?
Ren can't talk right now.
I grimaced. Could you ask him a question for me?
What's that?
Is it okay if I come over? I need to talk to him. There was a pause.
Ren? Why are you shaking?
Then she must have put her hand over the mouthpiece because I couldn't understand anything else.
It was so unbelievably humiliating. My remaining shreds of dignity caught on fire. When she came back on the line, she sounded confused.
"Sorry, Lena. He said he's too busy. He's getting ready to go to Valentina's party."
I perked up. "He's going for sure? It's for the girl who graduated last year, right?"
"Yes, I think it's to celebrate her 18th birthday."
At least I'd see him face to face. I took a deep breath. It was better than nothing. "Thanks, Odette."
"No problem."
I hung up the phone and sent a quick text to Thomas. Then I booked it all the way to the visitor center. I needed a favor. When I came bursting into the visitor center, Howard and Sonia looked up in alarm. They were both going through a stack of papers, and Howard was wearing these tiny old man reading glasses that made him look like a nearsighted lumberjack. I giggled. He put his hand on his chest.
"Lena, one of these days you're going to give me a heart attack."
"Your glasses are so..."
"So what?"
He drew himself up to his full height, and I burst out laughing again. "Just ignore me. Listen, I really need some help. I'm going to a party tonight, and I really need to look amazing. I think it's my best shot at winning Ren back. I need to find the dress." He took his glasses off.
"The one guaranteed to make anyone fall in love with you?"
"Yes, exactly. Just like my mom had. Only hopefully I'll actually get to wear it and it will do its job."
"The dress?" Sonia asked, looking back and forth between us.
"I'm sorry, but I'm not following."
Howard turned to her.
"Sonia, we'll have to close the cemetery early. Finding a new dress is probably pretty easy, but the dress? It's going to take some time."
He winked at me.
"And by the way, I remember catching a glimpse of your mother in her version of the dress. I think I walked into a wall."
Sonia shook her head.
"I'm still a little unclear about what we're talking about here, but you know we can't close the cemetery. It's completely against regulations."
"Fine. We won't close it. We'll abandon it for a few hours while the three of us take an emergency shopping trip into Florence."
I bounced up and down. "Thank you. That would be really awesome." Sonia still didn't look convinced.
"Howard, I'll just stay behind in case any visitors show up."
He shook his head.
"No, we're going to need you. You know I'll be completely useless when it comes to shopping. My closet is where things go to die. We need a woman's opinion."
She shuddered.
"Your taste is pretty bad. Remember when I made you get rid of that horrible pair of corduroys? They were sprouting hairs."
I clasped my hands in front of my chest. "Please, Sonia, I don't even know where the dress stores are, and I'm going to need all the help I can get. I have to look incredible tonight. Will you help me?" She looked back and forth between Howard and me, then shook her head.
"I think you've lost your minds, but all right. Pick me up at my house."
"Yes." Howard and I high-fived. Then I waited outside while he closed up the visitor center, and we both jogged up the path to the house. On the way into Florence, Howard and I filled Sonia in on our status as not related, sort of related. She looked shocked.
"You're telling me you're not actually father and daughter?"
"Not technically," I said.
"And Howard, you've known all along?"
"Yes."
She shook her head, then started fanning herself with her wallet.
"Only in Italy."
Howard looked at her.
"And Sonia, in the future, please don't redirect any of my deliveries. Although in this case, I think it worked out okay."
"Cross my heart, I'll never do anything like that again."
She turned around so she was facing me.
"What time does Ren pick you up?"
"At 9, but I'm not going with Ren. I'm going with Thomas."
"Oh, but I thought that you and Ren..."
She trailed off. "You thought me and Ren what?" Howard glanced at Sonia, then met my eyes in the rearview mirror.
"You know how in English we say that people wear their hearts on their sleeves? Well, in Italian you say, avere il cuore in mano. You hold your heart in your hand. Every time Ren looks at you, I think of that saying. He's crazy about you."
"No, he isn't." Sonia chimed in.
"Of course he is.
and you can't blame him. Look at you. The poor thing can't help himself.
He has a girlfriend.
He does?
Howard asked. I nodded.
Well, how do you feel about him?
They both looked at me, and I managed to stay quiet for about 3 seconds before blowing like a volcano. Fine! I'm in love with him. I'm completely in love with Ren. Besides Addy, he's the only person I've ever been around who makes me feel normal. And he's hilarious and weird, and he has a gap between his front teeth that I love. But none of that matters because he has a girlfriend. And yesterday, I must have had a momentary lapse in sanity because I kissed him and it totally freaked him out. Also, his girlfriend looks straight out of a fashion magazine, and whenever Ren sees me, I'm either sweaty or crying. So now I'm dressing up and going to a party in hopes that I'll get his attention long enough for him to at least talk to me so I can tell him how I really feel and try to at least salvage our friendship. So there. That's how I feel about Ren. Howard and Sonia both looked stunned. I slumped back in my seat. That's why I need the perfect dress. It was quiet for a moment, and then Sonia turned to Howard. Is money an object?
No.
Then turn left. I know where we need to go.
Howard drove us straight to a dress shop near the center of the city, and after we'd parked, all three of us got out and ran the 3 blocks from the parking center. When we burst into the shop, the woman behind the counter looked up in alarm.
Cos'è successo?
Stiamo cercando il vestito più bello nel mondo.
He turned to me.
She needs the dress.
The woman studied us for a moment, then clapped her hands.
Adalina, Sara, venite qui!
2 women emerged from the back room, and after going through the same exchange with Howard, they pulled out their tape measures and started measuring my waist and butt and bust and... yeah, it was pretty embarrassing. Finally, they started grabbing dresses from all over the store, then hustled me over to a dressing room and stuffed me and the dresses inside. I wriggled out of my running clothes and pulled the first one over my head. It was cotton candy pink and reminded me of the time I'd thrown up on a Ferris wheel. The second one was yellow and feathery and looked suspiciously like Big Bird's carcass. The third wasn't terrible, but the straps were so big they hovered a full inch above my shoulders, and the party was tonight. I couldn't just take it to a tailor for alterations. I looked at myself sternly in the mirror. Don't panic. But my hair panicked anyway. Or maybe that was just how it always looked.
How's it going?
Sonia called from outside. Nothing yet.
Try this one.
She tossed another one over the door, and I quickly changed into it. White and poofy. I looked exactly like a marshmallow. On her wedding day. Oh, no, I wailed. None of these are right. What if I can't find it?
I brought you to this place for a reason. Let me see if the shopkeeper's oldest daughter is around. She's a dress genie. Be right back.
I stepped up to the mirror and looked at myself again. Not only did I not look forgivable, but I looked ridiculous. There was no way I was going to win Ren back looking like something I roasted at Girl Scout camp.
Lena?
Sonia knocked on the door. Then the door opened, and she and another woman stepped in. The woman was in her late 30s, and she had her hair pulled up in a bun with a pencil stuck through it. She looked like she meant business. She gestured for me to spin around.
No, tutto sbagliato.
D'accordo,
Sonia said.
She says this one is all wrong.
Will you ask her to find me one that's all right?
Don't worry. It's what she's good at. Let her work.
The woman stepped forward, cupping my chin in her hands. She turned my face back and forth, studying my features, then stepped back and motioned for me to do another spin. Finally, she nodded and held up her hand.
Quel vestito perfetto. Wait.
When she came back, she was holding a pinkish nude-colored dress with embellished lace all over the top and a short, flowy skirt. I took it from her, holding it up in front of me. This one? I asked.
Yes, this one,
she said firmly. She stepped out of the room, pulling the door shut behind her. I took off the marshmallow dress and eased the new one over my head. The fabric was smooth and silky feeling, and it slipped easily over my chest and hips, landing in the exact right spot. I didn't even have to look in the mirror to know that it was the one. By the time Thomas pulled up in his dad's car, a silver BMW convertible, I had managed to completely transform myself. Sonia had helped me style my hair so it fell in soft, un-Medusa-ish curls, and had loaned me a pair of heels and diamond stud earrings. I put on makeup and perfume and had practiced my speech to Ren over and over. "Ren, I have something to tell you." When I looked in the mirror, I almost did a double take. I couldn't believe how Italian I looked.
"He's here,"
Howard yelled from downstairs. "Coming." I took a deep breath to steady my nerves, then teetered down the stairs. Sonia's high heels were really gorgeous, but crazy high. I miraculously made it to the bottom of the stairs without performing any sort of involuntary gymnastics, and when I looked up, Howard was giving me this misty look.
"You look beautiful. I don't care what Ren's girlfriend looks like. She doesn't stand a chance."
That would be nice, but I'll be happy if he just talks to me again.
"I'm betting on the former."
There was a knock on the door, and Howard crossed the room to open it.
"Hello. Are you Thomas?" "Yes. Nice to meet you."
I clattered over to the doorway.
"Whoa. Lena, you look..."
Thomas's jaw literally dropped, but then he noticed Howard looking at him like he was a deer during hunting season, and he quickly cleared his throat.
"Sorry. Nice dress. You look really pretty."
"You look nice, too. Gray-fitted suit, hair styled messily. I could practically hear Addie spontaneously combusting from here."
"You ready to go?"
he asked. "Ready." I walked over and gave Howard a hug. "How long can I stay out?"
"As long as you want. Well, within reason."
He winked at me.
"It's going to work out."
"Thanks." I followed Thomas out to his car, and he opened the door for me.
"You really do look gorgeous."
"Thanks."
"What did your dad mean by, it's going to work out?"
I'm not sure. I glanced at my phone for about the millionth time. All afternoon I'd been hoping Ren would call, and all afternoon he'd kept not calling. Thomas got in the front seat and put the keys in the ignition.
"Nice car, right?"
"Really nice."
"My dad has a Lamborghini, too. He told me if I have a clean driving record for a year, I can take it out sometime."
"Too bad it's not tonight."
"I know, right?"
He backed carefully out of the driveway, then took off down the road.
"Did you know you have to be 18 to drive a car in Italy? I think I'm the only one at our school who even has a license."
"Ren will get one next year."
"But he's only a junior."
"He'll be 18 in March."
"Oh."
He pulled out onto the road and accelerated, turning up the music too loud to talk. I'm sure riding through the Italian countryside in a luxury convertible with a young 007 should have been a magical experience, but it was lost on me. I was too busy mentally rehearsing what I was going to say to Ren, and trying to keep young 007's hands off me.
"Valentina's dad works with my dad, only he's even higher up. I've been to lots of parties at their house, and they're always crazy. One year they did this big Japanese dinner, and there were women lying on the serving tables. You had to eat your sushi off of them."
"Ew, really?"
"Yeah, it was awesome."
He slid his hand onto my bare knee, again, and I made a big show of rearranging my legs so he'd move his hand. Again. I looked at him and sighed. Any other girl would trade all the gelato in Florence for a chance to be sitting in my spot. But they weren't me, and they didn't know Ren. When we finally pulled up to the party, I was shocked. Not because the house looked like Dracula's castle, of course it did, but because of how many people were there. Cars and cabs were all funneling into the driveway while throngs of ecstatic partygoers weaved their way toward the front door. It took us 10 full minutes and 3 leg rearrangings just to wind our way up to the valet station.
When we got to the top, Thomas threw his keys to the valet, then made a big show of helping me out of the car. A red carpet was draped on the big stone steps leading up to the entryway, and tons of people were making their way inside. I'd been a little worried I'd be overdressed, but everyone looked like they were on their way to some kind of red carpet premiere. This was definitely a the dress occasion. "This is way bigger than I thought it would be," I said, grabbing Thomas's arm before I could lose my balance on the stairs.
"Told you. It's going to be awesome."
"Do all of your friends live in houses like this?"
"Just the ones who throw parties."
The entryway had a long, curving staircase and an extravagant chandelier made of colored glass. A man holding a big stack of papers stopped us.
"Name, please."
His accent was as thick as his biceps.
"Thomas Heath."
Thomas turned and grinned at me.
"And my date."
The man shuffled through his papers, marking Thomas's name.
"Bienvenuti."
"Do you mind if I check your list really quick?" I asked. "I'm wondering if my friend is here."
"No."
He scowled at me, covering the list with his hand.
"It is privato."
It wasn't like we were attending a party at the Pentagon or something. "I just need to look for one sec."
"Come on."
Thomas grabbed my hand and yanked me away from the list and farther into the house. Everyone was sardining themselves into this big, overly frilly room with high ceilings and, like, five more chandeliers, and we had to push our way in, tripping over all the fancy dresses and guys sweating into their jackets. All the furniture was moved to the outer edges of the room, and a makeshift stage had been set up in one corner. So far, there was just a bunch of instruments up there, but music was playing from speakers around the room at a level that could kill small birds. It was so crowded. How was I going to find Ren?
"Lena, Thomas."
Elena emerged from the crowd, grabbing my arm. She was wearing a short gray dress, and her hair was pulled up in a high ponytail.
"Wow, Lena, you look bella. This is the color for you."
"Thanks, Elena. Have you seen Ren?"
"Ren? No, I don't know if he's even coming. Mimi would probably kill him."
"Why?" Thomas cracked up.
"Guys, look. There's Selma."
He pointed to a tall, middle-aged woman who had climbed onto the stage and was fumbling around with cords. She was wearing a tiara and a hot pink mini-dress that was about 10 seconds from giving up on keeping her boobs covered.
"Ugh,"
Elena said, shaking her head.
"That is Valentina's mom. She was a supermodel in the 90s, and she displays sexy pictures of herself around the house. I think I would rather die than see my mom's cleavage on a daily basis."
"Your mom's bionic cleavage,"
Thomas said.
"We should try to get a good spot by the band. Valentina said they start playing at 10.
Elena shook her head.
"I'm waiting for Marco."
"Marco, huh?"
Elena scowled at him.
"Die? I just told him I would. It doesn't mean anything."
"Uh-huh."
"Elena, if you see Ren, will you tell him I really need to talk to him?" I asked.
"Sure. No problem."
She glanced at Thomas, then leaned in.
"Wow. Thomas looks incredibile."
She pronounced it the Italian way.
"Good choice. He is troppo sexy. I'm pretty sure every girl who's met him has tried for him. I guess you are the lucky one. It sucks that Ren broke up with Mimi for you, but I totally understand why you are here with Thomas."
800 exclamation marks went off in my head. Ren broke up with Mimi? When? Today? She frowned. "I don't know. Maybe yesterday? Mimi said she was glad, though. No offense, but Ren can be very strange. He always says whatever pops into his head." "Yeah, but that's what's so great about him." She slid her eyes at Thomas.
"Yeah, I guess so. See you later. I'm going out front."
"Bye. Just tell Ren where I am if you see him, okay?"
"You okay?"
Thomas asked when Elena had left. "Yeah, sure. Maybe better than okay. Ren had broken up with Mimi for me? Then what was all that in Rome? The urgency of my Find Ren mission had pretty much hit the roof."
"Let's get a drink and go over by the stage,"
Thomas said. "Sure.
The next couple of hours were incredibly slow. The band was Spanish, and after every couple of sets, the drummer got carried away and threw his drumsticks into the crowd, where they had to be fished out again before they could start playing the next song. Thomas kept disappearing for more and more drinks, and Ren kept not showing up. Where was he? What if he didn't show up? Was this whole the dress thing actually a curse? If so, I would have come in running clothes. Finally, I excused myself. Thomas, I'm going to the bathroom. I'll be back in a while. He gave me an unfocused thumbs up, and I pushed myself through the crowd, doing a quick scan of the party. As far as I could tell, Ren wasn't in the main room, and he wasn't on the front steps or in the entryway either. Where was he? Finally, I decided to actually use the bathroom, but there was a long line, and I kept my neck craned to watch for Ren. When it was my turn, I locked the door behind me, then looked in the mirror and sighed. My dress still looked great, but I was sweaty, and I could tell my hair was plotting a mutiny. I pulled it back into a ponytail, then checked my phone again. Nothing. Where was he? Thomas was waiting for me outside the door.
There you are. We have to hurry. Everyone's supposed to go outside. There's a big surprise.
I gave up on my shoes, taking them off and carrying them as we moved with the crowds toward the back doors. When we finally stepped outside, I sucked in my breath. The yard was the size of a football field, and dozens of large white blankets checkered the ground, their edges lit with tea lights. It was nauseatingly romantic. Half the people out there were going to get carried away and start professing their undying love to each other. Thomas, you didn't see Ren while I was in the bathroom, did you?
No, no, no.
He stopped at the bottom of the stairs, putting both hands on my shoulders.
Let's make a pact. No more talking about Ren. I just want to talk about you.
He grinned.
And me. Now come on.
He pulled me forward, and I stumbled a little as we made our way across the grass. Where are we going?
I told you. It's a surprise.
We walked all the way to an empty blanket on the outskirts of the yard, and Thomas sat down, loosening his tie and taking off his jacket. His shirt and hair were rumpled, and I wished for about the thousandth time that Addie were here to enjoy all this hotness. It was totally wasted on me.
Now lie down,
he said. What?
Lie down.
He patted the blanket. Thomas,
relax. I'm not going to do anything. Just lie down for a second. I promise I'll stay right here.
I looked at him for a moment, then lay down on the blanket, smoothing my dress around me. Now what?
Close your eyes. I'll tell you when to open them.
I looked at him, then exhaled, half closing my eyes. Did he have to be this gorgeous? It was really complicating my life. He started counting down slowly.
20, 19, 18.
By the time he got to 1, I'd been lying there for half a century, and I opened my eyes to the sound of a collective cheer going up from the lawn. All around us, white paper lanterns lit by candles were rising into the air. There were hundreds of them. Thomas grinned at my stunned expression.
Valentina told me they were doing this. Cool, right?
So cool. We watched quietly for a moment, the lanterns twirling up to the stars like graceful jellyfish. The night was beautiful and magical and... ugh! I was so miserable I could cry. Here I was in Italy, witnessing a scene out of a fairy tale, and all I could think about was Ren. Was I going to be like Howard, heartbroken for life? Was I going to have to buy my own longboard and start baking blueberry muffins in the dead of night?
Told you you'd like it. They're doing fireworks later, too.
Thomas reclined on one elbow, lowering his face close to mine. A bunch of lanterns were reflected in his eyes, and for a second, I lost track of why I wasn't into him. And then I remembered. Thomas, I have to tell you something.
Shh. You can tell me later.
Before I could react, he rolled on top of me, pressing his lips against mine and my whole body into the ground. For a second, it was like Christmas and my birthday and summer vacation all rolled into one. But then it was all so wrong.
I wriggled out from under him and sat up. Thomas, I can't do this.
Why?
He sat up too, a confused look on his face. This was probably his very first experience with rejection. Poor devil. I shook my head. You're great, and so good-looking, but I just can't.
Because of Ren?
Yeah.
Why'd you even come here with me if you're into Ren?
I'm sorry. It was really lame of me, and I should have told you earlier. He stood up and grabbed his jacket, brushing grass off his pants.
Lucky for you, Loverboy's right over there.
What? I whipped around. Ren was standing a few yards away, his back to me. I scrambled to my feet.
See you around,
Thomas said. Thomas, I really am sorry, I called after him, but he was already on his way back to the house. I took a deep breath, then scooped up my shoes and half ran over to Ren. He was wearing a navy blue suit, and it looked like someone had held him down and given him a haircut. I touched his back. Ren? He turned around, and I felt the shards of my broken heart crumble to dust. He looked so good. Like, so good.
Hey.
Not even a hint of surprise. I was really hoping you'd be here. Could we talk? Suddenly, Mimi materialized from a nearby group of girls. She was wearing a fitted black dress with cut-out panels along the ribcage, and her eyes were outlined in dark liner. She looked like a tiger. I'd never seen anything more terrifying. She linked her arm with Ren's.
Hello, Lena.
How's Thomas? He's okay, I said quietly.
Ren, let's go back inside. I think the band's going to start again.
Ren, can I talk to you for a minute? I asked. He was looking just past my right ear.
I'm kind of busy.
Please? It will only be a minute. I just have to tell you something.
He's busy, Mimi said,
tightening her grip on his arm. He looked down at her hand, then back up at me.
Okay. 1 minute.
Seriously, Ren?
Mimi growled.
It will just be a second. I'll be right back.
She turned and flounced away. That girl knew how to flounce.
What's up?
Ren asked quietly. Will you go for a walk with me? By the time we made it to the edge of the yard, the lanterns were just tiny specks in the sky, and I was 100% sure that Ren hadn't gotten over what happened in Rome. He just kept trudging after me like a well-dressed robot, and I felt myself sinking lower and lower. Was this even going to work? The yard was terraced, and we walked down some steps, passing a couple making out against a tree and a group of guys riding around on croquet mallets like they were jockeys. Totally something we'd laugh about. That is, if we were talking. Finally, we came to a white stone bench, and Ren sat down. I sat down next to him. Amazing party, I said. He just shrugged. Okay. He wasn't going to make this easy on me. I guess I'll just get right into it. My voice was wobbly. I've never met anyone like you. You're smart and funny and really easy to be around, and you're basically the one person I've met since my mom died who I don't feel like I have to act fake around. And I'm really, really sorry about what happened in Rome. Kissing you wasn't fair because you have a girlfriend. Or had a girlfriend. I looked at him, hoping he'd clarify, but he didn't say anything. Anyway, I didn't know right until that moment how I felt about you, but I should have just told you instead of basically jumping on you. Anyway, what I'm trying to say is, I really like you. A lot. But if you don't feel the same way about me, it's okay. Because you're really important to me, and I hope we can still be friends. Suddenly, a second round of cheering started up on the lawns, and there was a hissing noise followed by the pop of a red firework exploding across the sky. It would have been the perfect moment for Ren to gather me in his arms and profess his undying love. Only he didn't. I shifted uncomfortably. A few more fireworks went off, but Ren didn't even look up. It would be really awesome if you'd say something. He shook his head.
I don't know what you want me to say. Why didn't you tell me sooner? And back in Rome, why'd you say that you'd never thought of me as more than a friend?
Crap. I shouldn't have said that. I guess I was trying to save face. You obviously didn't want to kiss me, and I was so embarrassed. I was just trying to fix the situation. He looked up.
Well, you're wrong. I really did want to kiss you, but I stopped because I was worried you didn't mean it. Meeting Matteo was pretty crazy, and I didn't want things to happen just because you were in the middle of some kind of emotional roller coaster. And then afterward, you told me you didn't mean it.
But I did. That's what I'm... He cut me off.
I liked Mimi for a long time. Like 2 years. I thought about her all the time. And then when things finally started happening between us, I thought I was the luckiest guy ever. But then I met you, and suddenly I was avoiding her calls and trying to think of ways to get you to hang out with me. So the night we went to space, I called her and broke up with her. I didn't know if things were going to work out between you and me, but I really wanted the chance.
He shook his head.
Then we went to Rome, and all that stuff happened, and now tonight.
He stood up.
Why do you think you can be all over Thomas and then come tell me you like me?
A whole different kind of fireworks exploded behind my eyes. Why do you think you can be all over Mimi and then tell me you liked me all along? You're the one who's had a girlfriend all this time.
You're right. Had a girlfriend, who I broke up with. And I'm not the one who was just rolling around on the ground with someone else. What am I, your backup plan?
I jumped to my feet. If you'd actually been watching, you would have noticed that I pushed Thomas off me and told him I like you. But forget it. I don't even care anymore.
Me neither. I'm going back to the party. And you'd better get back to your date.
He turned and walked away.
Stronzo!
I yelled. A heart-shaped firework exploded over his head. Chapter 28. It took Howard almost an hour to find Valentina's house. For one thing, I didn't know who Valentina was, and for another, I couldn't find anyone who knew the address. Selma and her bionic cleavage were nowhere to be found, and I couldn't find Elena or Marco or anyone else I recognized. Finally, I got the bouncer to tell me where I was, but he didn't speak much English and kept guarding his clipboard from me like he thought I was trying to trick him into giving me access. Finally, I just forced my phone on him, and he gave directions to Howard. By the time Howard's car pulled up to the driveway, all the anger had drained out of me, and I was about as perky as a wet noodle. I felt crumbled. No, bedraggled. And when I got in the car, Howard didn't even ask how it had gone. He could tell by my face. When we got to the house, I threw my dress on the floor, then put on a t-shirt and a pair of pajamas pants, and went downstairs. I was on the verge of tears, but I couldn't handle the thought of crying alone in my room. Again. I'd reached my threshold of pathetic.
We have gelato and we have tea,
Howard said when I walked into the kitchen.
Which sounds best?
Gelato.
Excellent choice. Why don't you go sit in the living room? I'll bring you a bowl.
Thanks. I went and sat cross-legged on the couch, resting my head back against the wall. I'd spent all night looking for Ren, and then he'd seen me in the exact moment that Thomas had made his move. What were the chances? Was fate just against us? And had I really called him a stronzo? I didn't even know what that meant. Howard walked in with two bowls.
I got you two kinds, fragola y coco, strawberry and coconut. I'm sorry we don't have stracciatella. I can tell it's a stracciatella night.
It's okay. I took the bowl from him, balancing it on my knee.
Rough night?
I don't think things are going to work out with Ren. My eyes teared up. Not even friend-wise.
Your talk didn't go well?
No. We actually got into this awesome screaming match, and I called him a bad word in Italian. Or at least, I think it was a bad word.
What was it?
Stronzo. He sat down on the chair across from me, nodding gravely.
We can recover from Stronzo. And remember, it isn't over until it's over. For years, I thought things were completely finished with your mother, but we actually started talking again before her diagnosis.
You did?
Yes.